We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Oh, yes, indeed. We are back. Happy New Year all here on the pregame show. We're delighted to welcome in Tim Twentyman. He is with the Detroit Lions.com senior writer insider, and he does the Twentyman in the Huddle podcast. You can follow him as we do on Twitter at T20man. Tim, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, and looking forward to seeing where the Lions are at this point. There was steady improvement toward for a large chunk there. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. So all of a sudden, Jared Goff isn't the guy you have to replace. Is that receivers coming back? Is that feeling better in the passing game? Or is that him being better than people thought?
You know, I think it's probably a little bit of everything. You know, I think one of the good things that Ben Johnson, the offensive coordinator, did here when he took over in the offseason was, look, he invited Jared in, and they built this thing together. It wasn't one of those things like, this is what I like to run. Hey, Jared, you know, let's run this. It was, what does Jared like to do? What is he good at? And really incorporated him into that process, let him take ownership of the offense. And Jared's been great all year. And to your point, look, I think a lot of people forget this is the former number one pick. You know, a guy who's won a lot of big games, who took the Rams to the Super Bowl. He's only 28 years old, and he's under contract for two more years. And so I think it's a good situation Detroit fell in, you know, with Jared, especially the way he's played all year, but especially the last month. And I think he's definitely going to be their guy moving forward.
And, you know, when Dan Campbell had that first press conference, there was a lot of scoffing at some of the kneecap biting and whatnot. But what would you say are some of the key elements here closing out year two where the development of the team, development of a winning culture, really is starting to bear some fruit here?
Yeah, you said it. And I think that's the big thing is you know, the culture change and the winning culture and, you know, not being surprised by success, expecting success. Look, this is a team that's playing meaningful football in the month of December, probably for the first time since 2017 when Jim Caldwell was here, when 9-7 wasn't good enough to save his job. And so, you know, I think development has probably been really key to that, too. You look at some of the young guys from last year into their second season, just how they've become, you know, cornerstone players. A guy like a Penei Sewell, right? I mean, in 2 years has become, you know, probably the best right tackle in football. And just from the beginning of this year with a lot of young guys on defense, Aiden Hutchinson, Kirby Joseph, some of those guys have now become really big key pieces to this defense, playing much better football the second half. And so, you know, it was a culture change under Dan Campbell, but I think, you know, the player development, I think, has been a huge part of this, too. You're seeing the young guys really becoming core pieces and playing really good football and are kind of the catalyst behind the success this year.
Tim, you mentioned the development and you talked about the defense, but what happened last week in Carolina? And can the Bears do the same thing running the ball?
Well, you know, they're the number one ranked rushing offense. And I think when they watched that film, they had to be licking their chops a little bit because, I mean, it was really disappointing because the Lions knew what Carolina was going to do. Look, they're a physical football team. Steve Wilkes got them playing pretty well, 570 total yards and 320 rushing yards.
Yeah.
And it was from the first play to the last play.
The first two plays went for, what, 60 yards? There was a 30-yard run,
yeah.
A 30-yard run.
I mean, both Hubbard and Foreman had 100 yards in the first half. That's how bad it was for Detroit. And look, you know, teams have games like that. I think the disappointing thing was Detroit would have been in the playoffs with the number seven seed had they won that game last week. Everything fell that they couldn't control their way. And so now they need to win, obviously, and get a little help. And so, look, if I'm Chicago, you look at the first game, week 10, I believe it was. It was over 250 rushing yards. Fields had 147 and two. And so you've got to feel pretty confident if you're Chicago. And look, Detroit had to watch that tape and figure it out. I think they got to come ready to play. I expect that at home. with what is on the line. And they've said all week that they have a good plan for Justin Fields. You look what Buffalo did, obviously different personnel than what Detroit has, but I would expect they do some of those elements and look at how they were successful. And look, they better come to play, and they better be able to stop that Bears run, because like Carolina, they know exactly what Chicago wants to do and it's going to plan to do coming in here.
Tim, I just want to clarify what you said earlier. I believe the Lions hold the Rams pick, which at this point would be like the seventh overall selection. They are not looking at quarterback. They're not one of the teams that wants to trade up. They're satisfied with Jared Goff, and they're not looking to improve there?
I don't think so. All indications we've gotten from, you know, Dan Campbell, from Ben Johnson, and even, you know, talking with people in the front office is, look, Jared's playing some of the best football of his career. You look at his passer rating, yards, touchdowns. I mean, he's thrown for over 4,000 yards. He's got 26 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Hasn't thrown an interception in the month of December, actually. Hasn't thrown an interception in 2 months. Now, he's just playing really good football. This is a Lions offense that ranks in the top 5 in points scored, top 5 in total offense, top 10 in passing. And Jared's 28, and he's under contract for 2 more years. And the way quarterback contracts are now, that it's actually a very reasonable contract, too. And so I think they're really happy. I think this was an important year for Jared because of what you talked about, them having the Rams pick and then their pick. They've also got 2 second-round picks. They got Minnesota's second-round pick from the T.J. Hockenson trade. So, you know, they have assets to move up. But I think Jared, is in the way he's played this year, I think they're going to look at their defense and try to, you know, find some playmakers on that side of the football, because I think if this is just an average defense, you know, the Lions are 32nd in points allowed and 32nd in total defense, or 31st and 32nd right there. One of the worst defenses in the league. I think they're just average. This is probably a 10-11 win season. So I think, you know, they're set at quarterback, or at least they think they are. And then you try to fix this defense, and I think then they believe they're off and running.
Jameson Williams has returned to the lineup for Detroit here as of late, and we've seen a Bears secondary that's very young. We were talking earlier in our show here about the amount of man coverage they've begun playing. So how dangerous, how effective has this Lions receiver corps become?
Yeah, you know, the return of DJ Chark has been big, too. You look at, he's had over 90 yards in 3 of his last 4. He's a big deep play threat. That's why they went and got him in free agency. And then you mentioned Jameson Williams. He's coming back. He's still working his way back. But, guys, that speed is something different. You know, I've been around the league for a while. I've seen a lot of fast guys. I mean, I put it right there with Tyreek Hill. I mean, but it's different because he's a long strider. He's a little taller and thinner. He looks like a gazelle running out there. So he adds that deep play element. And then Amon-Ra St. Brown is, you know, quickly becoming one of the best wide receivers in the league and certainly one of the best slot guys. And so it's a really good receiver core. They can spread it around to a lot of different guys. Jared feels really confident with all his weapons. And so it really is one of those things where you're not trying to force it to one guy. It's like who's open, who's got the good matchup. And I think that's, you know, part of a lot of, you know, part of Jared's success as well is, you know, he hasn't had to force the football. He's got a lot of weapons that he feels confident in. That wide receiver core is really one of the better parts of this football team right now.
All right, I'm going to stick with the defense real quick. Sorry, Molly. You know, I keep hitting on it because I think this is an opportunity for the Bears team to maybe get a win just because it's a divisional matchup. But Aiden Hutchinson here in Chicago, we're going to have a high draft pick. Talk about Will Anderson, Jalen Carter, mm-hmm. drafting him. How has he been in Detroit in his development? Has he been – I've watched a lot of tape of him, and I'm impressed with him. But are they happy with what they got in him, drafting him as high as they did?
Yeah, certainly. You know, I think with Aiden, the one of the things you look at is he's played the second most reps of anyone on this defense, you know, behind Alex Anzalone. And so for a rookie defensive end to be able to be a three-down guy, look, he leads all rookies with 7 sacks. He's a try-hard, never quit, high motor, good character, can do a lot of different things. I mean, you know, I mentioned the 7 sacks, but he's also got 2 interceptions. He's second on the team in tackles for loss. So, you know, he's been everything I think that they expected him to be. I think he still has to find a few more tools in his toolbox in terms of the pass rush moves, counter moves, secondary moves, but that'll come. He's a rookie, but I think everything from a skill set and a character, character point, that he's been exactly what they want. And as you guys know, I mean, when you guys were really, really good, a few years back, it was that defense. It was that pass rush. It was Khalil Mack and those guys being able to get after the quarterback. You have to do that in this league now. And the Lions think they got a pretty good one who's going to develop into a really good player in Hutchinson.
You know, Justin Fields has a chance to get to the best single season rushing record ever by a quarterback. I believe it's at 1206 from Lamar Jackson, and he's got something like 1,011 after really being stopped last week. Was there anything, or have you heard anyone say there was anything that you saw the Buffalo Bills do that helped them to shut down Fields more than he has been previous to that? And the 147 yards against the Lions in the first meeting, I'm sure they went to school on that to try to limit it. I don't see how – I think it's natural talent. Like, I don't know that there's anything you can do specifically to stop it, but what are they working on to try to stop Fields in particular?
Yeah, I thought Buffalo did a really good job. They kind of used that mesh charge with their defensive ends and then kind of looped their linebackers around and really made him stay in the pocket. And that's what Detroit's talked about, too, is, look, he's gonna have some runs. He's going to make some plays. Like you mentioned, he's that good of an athlete. And so it's just limiting him. It's limiting the explosives. Can't have the 60-yarders, the big ones that he breaks. I thought Buffalo did a really good job of kind of limiting those big plays and keeping him in the pocket. And to your point about the athleticism and what he can do, with his legs, I think when they, get a few receivers, you talked about a high draft pick and wanting to get a, a pass rusher. I think that's a team that could really use a couple of receivers as well and some weapons around him. And when they do that, I think this is going to be a really dangerous Chicago offense because of what he gives them in terms of his rushing ability. But look, I think Detroit's going to look at what Buffalo did there. Like I said before, obviously different personnel. Buffalo's one of the best defenses in the league, so you can't you got to be who you are. You can't just take their game plan, what they did with their personnel and come in with that being your game plan. But there will certainly be some elements. You won't see Aiden Hutchinson and James Houston, running past the quarterback and going wide. I think they're going to be very conservative in their rush to just really try to keep Justin in the pocket. And look, if Justin Fields is in the pocket, throws for 300 yards and three touchdowns and beats you, I think you tip your cap and say, good job, young man. But you can't let him run for 150 yards and two touchdowns because, that's how Detroit's going to lose this football game, is if, they can't contain Justin Fields.
I really thought Jeff Okuda was starting to have some nice moments earlier in the season. And, in recent weeks has been beat at times in man coverage. And it seems like Lions fans, part of this is likely the draft status, being drafted that high, the expectations are high with it. But how bad has Jeff Okuda been?
The last couple of weeks, I think he'd be the first one to say he hasn't played up to the way he was playing, to begin the season, when he was living up to that number three draft pick status. But, I think we got to remember too that, he is in his third season, but he had only played 10 games his first 2 years. He had the core muscle injury as a rookie, played 10 games, and then the first game of the season last year tore his Achilles. Was spent a whole year rehabbing that thing. So, I still think of Jeff as a young player. He's had moments where he's been really good this year, played like the number three pick, and then, like you mentioned, the last couple weeks, been a little subpar. He got benched in the second half last week. And so, I would expect Jeff to bounce back. Just knowing him, he's a real high character guy. He wants to be good. Certainly, it's not his fault he was drafted number three. That was the former regime here, and it is what it is. But we've seen at times this season where he's looked like that kind of guy. It's consistency now with Jeff and being able to do it week to week. That's the big thing with him.
Tim, it's a little different for you now covering these Lions. How much more fun is it covering a team that's winning and that you can talk about playoffs potentially?
Yeah, that's the fun part, right? I mean, you're looking at other scenarios. Unfortunately, if they would have won last week, they would have you know, controlled their own fate. They would have been in the number seven seed right now with 2 weeks to go. But look, it will come in meaningful football in the month of December. Mm-hmm. After winning three games last year, you know, I said earlier in the year, I think you just want to double your win total, get to 6-7 wins, and be in the graphic, right? Be playing meaningful games in the month of December. And we haven't had that here since 2017. So it's been a while, and it's fun to kind of scoreboard watch and see what else is going on and have a chance to get in this thing postseason. It's just fun to be playing meaningful football in the month of December, guys, for sure.
And they opened the season like 1-6, right? And,
yeah, 1-6.
So what was the big turnaround? What happened that changed their fate? Was it the defense getting better? Was it the quarterback getting better? What do you think it was?
No, it was really the defense. I mean, Jared and this offense has been playing well all season long. I mean, when they were 1-6, they were one of the top-ranked offenses in the league. They were just historically bad defensively. I mean, they lost to Seattle 48-45. They lost to Philadelphia 38-35. Imagine scoring 35 points and losing a football game. Imagine scoring 45 points and losing a football game. So, you know, if Detroit misses out on this thing, I think those are going to be some of the games they look back on and are like, man, we really let some games slip away there when our defense was really bad. And we talked about it a little earlier. They were really young on defense. Overall, this is the second youngest roster in the league, but that's certainly the youngest defense, I think, if you break it down. And so, you know, some of those guys have started to play better. They've grown up a little bit. You kind of expect that. They had, when they were 1-6, they had a player-only meeting, and, you know, the defense did, and they aired some grievances amongst themselves. They were real honest with each other, and since that moment, they've been playing much better football, and so, you know, that turnaround was 100% on the defense. They played better ball, not last, you know, last week withstanding, but, you know, over this stretch where they've been, you know, 6-2, they've played much, much better football defensively.
And Tim, Lions fans are an extremely passionate group who've you know, sort of slogged their way through a variety of losing seasons over the years, continue to show up and spend money. And so now with the team that's in the playoff picture this late in the season, one of the things the Bears have talked about during the week here is their young roster being prepared to go into a playoff atmosphere in a hostile environment in December, well, now in January on New Year's Day. Give us a sense for just what is Ford Field going to be like today?
Yeah, it's going to be rocking, guys. I mean, I think, you know, the city has been, you know, dying for 50-year-plus years to have a winner here. And, you know, I think they can start to see some signs of what Dan Campbell and his staff are building here, the kind of football team that they want to be. It kind of mirrors this lunch pail, gritty Detroit mentality, right? And I think they're really behind this team. And during this stretch, Ford Field's been electric. Look, they're selling out. They sold out here. They sold standing room only seats, which has been the case for the last four games here. And look, the Monday night game against Chicago back in 2011, there are a few times in my life I've covered something and my ears were still ringing when I left.
That was loud.
It was that Monday
that was
night
loud.
Game in
I 2011. Yeah.
Yeah, in 2011.
Sure.
And that's what Ford Field can be. If you give them a good product, and they've done that the last 2 months, and I think the city can sense that they can play a factor in this team maybe getting into the playoffs. So I would expect Ford Field to be you know, rocking. I think it could rival that 2011 game. I think it's going to be loud and rowdy in here, and it should be a fun environment to cover a football game.
Tim, thanks for jumping on. We appreciate your insights. Appreciate it. Did you pick them? You must have picked Detroit, right?
Yeah, you know, I do like Detroit in this one, just being at home. And after, you know, coming off the clunker that was last week, I would be very, very shocked if this team comes out flat and isn't ready to play. You know, I think they're going to have a pretty good plan. And just being home, I see it a close game, but I like Detroit at home with what's on the line.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
That is Tim 21. He had joined us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. I don't know how many people are picking the Bears, but this is an interesting spot for exactly what you said, Anthony, the idea that there is this playoff atmosphere. And you got a chance to play spoiler against the team you could argue you
should. Hey, guys, they're still
won.
Detroit. They're still Detroit.
They are Detroit. There you go. That is
I always feel I that
it.
Way. And he's right about that 2011 game, man. That thing was loud as can be. But most of the time we were there, it felt like playing in a mall. It wasn't loud. It was just, yeah. But it will be a playoff atmosphere. But what happens when the Bears win today? Let's think about that.
When the like Bears it. Win.
I
All
like
right.
it. Yeah. We're going to get angry phone calls in the post game.
That's right. Yeah, we will.
All right.
No moral victories.
It is the pregame show on the Score.
We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Oh, yes, indeed. It is the pregame show on The Score, and we are into week 17, game 16, and Detroit a fun opponent. I want to go back to something that Tim Twentyman said. He said that he thought if the Bears drafted a couple more receivers that and got more players around the quarterback, then maybe they'd have a chance. This is a really fascinating idea because here we are with postseason talk gone, but postseason building talk on, and we will get into the free agent market, and we know the Bears made the trade they made for Chase Claypool because they felt that the free agent market was not going to be overloaded with receivers, and clearly last year there was a ton of movement of receivers around the league, and we know the cost went kind of astronomical. Is it wise to think the Bears can wait on taking a receiver if they can get enough out of a trade down in the draft? Where would you make the priority of receiver? You know, they hopefully have Chase Claypool back, right? He's limited in practice. Hopefully he's back. Equanimeous St. Brown should be back. We don't know Dante Pettis. We'll find all this out directly about who's in and who's out at the receiver position. But we know Darnell Mabry is not walking through that door. Mooney. When you look at where they're at with their receiving core and what we have seen them have to field, and now, again, Velus Jones played better, but I don't even know if he's a receiver, guys. Where are you at with that position, and how will you look at it moving forward here in the next two games?
There's so many holes on this roster. I think it's an interesting question, but I'm a firm believer. I don't know where you stand, Anthony, but you build from inside out. You got to go O-line, D-line, D-line here for three technique with Eberflus in his defense. O-line needs to be upgraded. But that being said, you look at like Justin Jefferson in Minnesota. You look at what Miami did with Waddle and Hill down there for Tua. They're very important in this league because the way the rules are set up, the way the offense can go about their business with the rules defensively. But me personally, it's O-line, D-line first, and then wide receiver.
I would agree. I think that especially D-line. That's the thing that, the excitement that many of us would have to see more talent around Justin Fields is valid. At the same time, where's the position that it's most difficult to evaluate, most difficult to get people who can immediately affect the game? I think receivers you can get in the second round, you can get in the fourth round, you can get them perhaps via trade. Defensive line, if you really want impact players, you don't want to miss on those guys. If there's an opportunity to get defensive linemen early in the draft, if a Jalen Carter looks like someone who can step in and immediately be a Pro Bowl caliber player, then you don't want to miss on a guy like that, because that in turn does affect winning and losing. It may not necessarily enhance Justin Fields' passing yardage per game, but it can put him in a position to win more games, like the Dolphins and like the first game against Detroit. Moments like that where a nice stop defensively was the difference between winning and losing some of those games. And I think you can have a good coaching staff and a quality scheme that can effectively scheme you into effectiveness. You can find ways to maybe hide mediocre offensive line talent more effectively than you can mediocre defensive line talent. So, you know, same thing with wide receiver. If you got a quarterback like Justin Fields, he'll be better suited having more talent around him. But, right. you can scheme the offense into some effectiveness at a higher clip than you can if you're just not good up front on defense.
The Bears are not going to have a wide receiver that has 500 receiving yards, right? Huh. Mooney had a shot at that maybe, but he's gone. He's not coming back. You look at where they're at. Cole Kmet is the guy that's going to finish the year most likely as their number one guy with receiving yards. He certainly has come out. He's better than he's been, right? But I don't know that he's a breakthrough player, but he's got 460 receiving yards, so he has a chance at 500. But it would be very unlikely that they would have a wide receiver with 500 receiving yards. That is a low total. I mean, 500 yards in the modern age of football,
Mully,
is
it's
not
sad.
Asking
it's
much.
Sad.
It's pathetic.
It really is sad. I mean,
what? Let me ask you, what's worse? 8.5 sacks from the defensive line or nobody with 500 receiving yards?
The answer is yes. Right? I'm looking at the Bears stats right now. They average 136.5 yards a game passing. That's 32nd in the NFL. That's just sad. And I talked about in this day's NFL, with the rules the way they are and the way it works, that it should be better than that. And it's just sad. And a lot has to fall on, they obviously ran the ball. Luke Getsy early in the season was just calling runs and runs and runs and third and long, all situations he's just always calling runs. But it is sad, and that needs to improve. That just needs to improve. It's just, we'll go back to that. The total sacks or the lack of passing yards, what is worse? And my answer is yes.
with the lack of pass rush there, the lack of sacks, it's almost like you're not putting up resistance. The opponent just doesn't look uncomfortable. So I'm sure it's the old defensive lineman in me, but I'd go to the sack numbers. I'd go to the sack totals being even more disappointing, even more disheartening than the lack of growth, of development, of talent, of playmaking at wide receiver. Because, you can at least point to the volume of passes being low. But it's not like there's not a volume of pass attempts against the Bears. There's folks dropping back snap after snap. There's just nobody getting home up front. So I'm going to go with the lack of production on the D. It's a great question. I hadn't even thought of it through that lens before. Which one is more disappointing?
Anthony, what's that meeting room like? You know what I mean? When they watch game film on Monday and they're not getting home, what's that like? Because I've been in O-line rooms when they're giving up 9 sacks a game or whatever, and it's just horrible. But this is week in, week out. They're just not getting the quarterback.
Right. I mean, you're trying to piece together any little, scintilla of like, you would have maybe gotten close if you'd have committed to this move. Or look at his pass set here. Look how he dropped that inside foot. You had a chance to counter if you would have done it this way. You're almost trying to, work through what could have been because they're not even legitimately close to the quarterback.
Yeah.
The only real answer to that question is the new Zing Zang Bloody Mary can cocktail.
There we go.
Premium vodka already.
I guarantee
in the
you, there's
can.
A lot of people this morning hitting that.
they're always ready, perfect for your game day tailgates. Please Zing Zang responsibly. We're going to be back with the great Mark Grody. We'll find out who's in, who's out, what's going on from our guy Mark Grody. We'll do that next. It is the pregame show on The Score.
We're back with more of the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook pregame show on Sports Radio 670 The Score with Mully, Patrick Manley, and Anthony Herron. Brought to you by Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook, official sportsbook of the Chicago Bears. Download the Bet Rivers Online Sportsbook app today.
Oh, yes, indeed. It's the pregame, and it's Grody time. Mark Grody joins us now on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Mark, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mully and gentlemen. The Bears all of a sudden have themselves a glut at wide receiver, as we are just learning now that Chase Claypool will play in the game today.
Gives me something to watch more.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Isn't that the truth, Patrick?
Yes, like, it is.
I'm speaking in desperation. I am desperately happy because now there is something for us to evaluate that is absolutely real beyond the quarterback Justin Fields. So we'll see what Chase Claypool looks like in his first action since December 4th. Remember, he got hurt against Green Bay. Then you had the bye week between then and the 18th, and then all of a sudden he's not playing against Philadelphia. He's not playing against Buffalo, and he has waited until the Detroit game to play. So that is good news for the Bears. Also, Dante Pettis is good to go. There was some concern about his ankle in the middle of the week, so he is ready to go, and he will return punts and be a handy receiver at times, as he was last week when he caught that wide-open touchdown. Equanimeous St. Brown gets to go up against Amon St. Brown. You know, that $1,000 bet is on the line, boys. Tevin Jenkins and Cody Whitehair will play in this game, so the offensive line looks somewhat sturdy again. And check this out, guys. Alex Leatherwood inactive today, and as far as we know, that has nothing to do with injury, as he is the old Alex Leatherwood, is a healthy scratch, and it's not particularly surprising. It's jarring. It sucks, but the way he's played, I'm not surprised.
No, I'm not either. And with all those names you just named,
yeah,
that's a guaranteed Bears win. Everybody's back.
The Bears are back.
They
absolutely
are back. Here we go. The preseason Bears are back. Hey, quick question though. You've been in that locker room. This is a question I want to know is, who's more responsible for the positive attitude that is still with this team after this 8-game losing streak? Is it the coaches? Is it that locker room? Is it certain players? Like, how is that? Like, how is there still a good vibe there?
I think it's I think it's Matt Eberflus 100%. And I still, Patrick, go back to the Washington game, where after the Washington game, there was two players in particular, Justin Fields and Jalen Johnson, two of the most influential players on that team, were down in the dumps, and they were talking about how we're sick and tired of hearing about how we're coming close. And they didn't, and that's the message from the top. The message from the top is things are getting better. You just wait. This thing is going to take off. And really, since then, for better or for worse, they have carried that message and maintained that at least positivity to the media and to their teammates, because this was a season where Matt Eberflus and his boss Ryan Poles had to tell these players to buckle up. Without telling them it's going to be a bad season, they had to let them know that this might be a bad season and to keep their chins up and that it's going to get better. And I know that all sounds so Pollyannish, and it's not necessarily what we want to hear, because honestly, I'd prefer to hear Justin Fields tell the media after the game exactly what's hurting on him, or that he's sick and tired of coming close. But we have not come close to hearing anything like that since the Washington game. So I do think that it is the coaches, and I do think that they hit it home again during the mini bye week.
Is there a play that stands out to you who this game or the last two games are maybe pivotal for, vital for? You referenced Alex Leatherwood being inactive, apparently a healthy scratch. So, you know, his Bears career, his Bears future could be in peril here. Is there a player that stands out that today and maybe next week are really vital for?
Two guys. I'll give you an offensive guy and a defensive guy, Anthony. I love the progress of Kyler Gordon, and I want to see that guy finish out these final two games strong. Because if he finishes out these two games strong, then it will have been, in my opinion, a successful year for him. A year that started off rickety for him. He was not good early on when teams were picking on him, but he has gotten good, you know, with the three picks in the last few weeks. Really, when before he had the concussion, he was playing well and has played well since returning from his concussion. So I want to see that momentum carry. You know, it's incredibly important to make sure that you have what you think you have, because the Bears have so many other needs. So if you could honestly and earnestly say that you've locked down Kyler Gordon as either your slot or an outside option, because he's been getting much more time on the outside, I think that that's a huge thing for him. And then the other guy that I'm interested in watching, and he obviously has a lot more to to prove than Kyler Gordon is Velus Jones, because I was fascinated by the game that he had last week. I didn't think he was going to get the chance on offense, especially last week, and I guess that was maybe more out of need than anything. But let's see if he can keep it going. I mean, that 44-yard play that he made last week was absolutely legit, and we saw all of his powers in play, and he was very good on kick returns as well. So Velus is a guy that I want. Let's see if he can pick it up, and he will not. If he plays super well in these next two games, like, you don't look at it and say, okay, he's over it. It was just some weird stuff in the beginning of his career. You still have to look at that with an objective eye, but it was, sure would be promising if we saw him make more plays in the next two games.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Bears are looking for playmakers. There's no doubt about it. We talked a little bit earlier about some of the issues on the defensive line. Is there anything that they can do to get more pressure from their defensive line?
It's desperate, man. They are getting desperate. They are running out of answers, and I almost feel like they just want to tell us, look, we're sorry about the defense. This is not working out. This defensive line is not working out. I actually kind of like the idea that Matt Eberflus was throwing around earlier this week of maybe seeing Justin Jones rushing the quarterback a little bit more. He's been an okay player, but he's got a great motor. Like, he's one of those guys. So I'd be interested to see them attempt that. But it's getting to be that desperation mode. It's been such a disappointing season for Trevis Gipson. You know, there was some high hopes for him. You know, back, you know, the 2020 draft, he came here. So this, you know, being his third season with the Bears, the year that a lot of us expected him to, I don't know, breakout's the right word, because I don't think he ever had that, you know, 15 to 17 sack expectations, but maybe, you know, 8 to 11 sacks on the season, something like that, and obviously has not come close. Dominique Robinson, you know, remains a project. You know, earlier in the season, he had the quick success, and I even asked him, I said, so you're no longer a project? And he's like, please, I'm still a project. And he's still absolutely a project. So that means
he's really watching his own tape.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Like, I don't think I've ever
seen anything. That's a good
thing. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that on draft day. Like, usually, you know, GMs and scouts will kind of try to keep that private if he is a project. But every scout, every, you know, Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, I'll call them a project. Even Dominique Robinson gets on the horn. Yeah, I'm a project. So let's not have too high of hopes for me this year. And that's kind of the way it's played out for him.
Mark, you mentioned Justin Jones moving around, maybe playing some more D-end, and Eberflus talked about that. Are there any other positions and or players you think that we'll see maybe a little bit more of rotationally or anything like that, or is that just more just coach talking the last two games, anything can happen?
Well, I think that the secondary continues to be a really interesting place to watch, other than Kyler Gordon. But, you know, I know you guys were talking about Jalen Jones earlier. Another guy that, you know, Josh Blackwell is a fascinating player because he's thrived on special teams.
Dookie.
And that's right. That's the true key to his success.
100%.
Yeah,
the bowl winning Dookie. Yeah, that's right. Sorry, I had to throw that in.
Hey, that's pretty big. That's pretty big. But Josh Blackwell has turned into be a nice surprise. Not somebody I had predicted that would be playing in and thriving in games at this point in the season. Maybe I should have. So he's an interesting guy. I still like watching Elijah Hicks, the seventh round safety out of Cal, seeing what he can develop into or if he is anything. So, you know, it's those secondary guys, and then I haven't even mentioned Jaquan Brisker, but, you know, he's got two games to continue to show that he is for real and he's a legitimate player in this league and a guy who will be known going into next year. So I do see a lot of promise in what's going on with the secondary with the guys that we know about and some of the guys, like I mentioned, Josh Blackwell, that we're kind of see developing before our eyes.
And Gross, it seemed like a really nice response game from the special teams at large last week. And now they're going to be inside in a dome, so the return game should be able to field it cleanly. The place-kicking game should be outstanding. So I'm just wondering, from what you saw last week, do you feel like, and in you know, listening to Coach Hightower during the week here, do you feel like all the concerns that might have been there, especially specific to Cairo Santos, are they behind us now?
I'd like to think so, because – you know, the guy, Cairo Santos has been so good with the Bears. And then, you know, missing five extra points is absolutely jarring. He made the hash change out on the field, and I talked to him about that. And, you know, I even talked to him about his job security. And he said, yeah, look, you start missing kicks, and that's just the way the world works when you are a kicker. You start to hear about your job, and that's going into last week's game where he was good and had to deal with the weather. He actually told me that the tyrannic weather from last week against Buffalo was better than it was the week before against Philadelphia, which I guess makes sense because didn't he miss an extra point? Huh? So he seems to have gotten his confidence back. And then to come full circle on the spirit of the question, playing indoors, yeah, what a relief that's got to be for that entire special teams unit and everybody that is a part of it, because it's almost like they've earned it. You know, having to, you know, these cult, the Green Bay game, the Philadelphia, they've had three straight December games at Soldier Field attempting to manage and to snap out of a quote-unquote special team slump, and they were able to do it to some degree last week against Buffalo, and now you get your reward. You get to play in a dome in Detroit today. So, yeah, I do expect the Cairo Santos will look very comfortable today.
You know, the fact of the matter is that the Bears can't get a lot out of the season, but they can play spoiler, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about a division opponent, you can ruin their season right here, right now. This is kind of a must-win game for Detroit. And if you run over them, Carolina style, that's going to leave a mark.
Yeah, and I love the fact that this is not a game where we're watching a team rest their starters. Like, you want the Bears to go up against the best possible competition in the Detroit Lions. And not to mention, too, guys, the beating the Bears took on November 13th against Detroit at Soldier Field, where they lose by one. Justin Fields goes crazy in that game, 147 yards and a couple of touchdowns, but the Bears blew it in the fourth quarter. They were up 14. You had the Jeff Okuda pick six. You had the DeAndre Swift touchdown. So if any of that means anything to the Bears, like, they had a pretty good handle on Detroit for a lot of that game. So just when we actually look at this matchup in this game, it does seem like it could be very interesting and it could be very close, especially the Lions needing to win, and then the Bears getting these players back too. And we mentioned the fact that the kicking game may be more comfortable indoors. How about Justin Fields getting himself back indoors as well after having to endure that and having to sort of lose out to the elements last week? There will be no complaining about that this week.
I'm going to go to the Wayback Machine here, Mully. You were talking about knocking the Detroit Lions out of the playoffs. Year 2000, we played them Christmas Eve. Paul Edinger hit a 54-yard field goal to knock them out of the playoffs. It just felt so good knocking your division opponent out, and it did feel good. That was a fun one, though. But you talked about Justin Fields getting on turf. Is there much talk about him trying to break the rushing record? Like, what's the talk around that?
I mean, there's definitely been questions about it, and I think that Justin Fields' attitude is really good about it. It's sort of – I've narrowed it down to – him thinking, why not? Why not? May as well break the record. I don't want to ever be in this position again to have to break the record and have to run that much. But I will say this, Luke Getsy, and I think he was being serious. I don't think he was fibbing. He says he's not going to call plays just to get Justin Fields the record. Like, that's not in their heads at all. That's not what they're thinking. Now, if when they play Minnesota next week, he's 40 yards short of it, I would imagine they would do the necessary things to get him the record. But they've been pretty coy about, you know, saying, look, it's week to week. It's the game plan. We want to see this guy throw more. This may be the opportunity to see it. So I don't think that they're going to mess around much either. And And the Bears have to end this eight-game losing streak because they have matched a franchise record, which only the 1978 Bears have pulled off, and the 2002 Bears did as well, which I know. Patrick Manley, you weren't the reason for it, but I'm pretty sure you were on that roster. I don't think you were on the 1978 Bears. I know you had a long run with the Bears.
Nope, I was three.
Long run. but you don't want to match those two teams' records. You don't want that to be what this season was all about, even though that's kind of what this season has been all about, losing.
Great stuff, Mark. Appreciate your time, buddy.
All right, guys. Have a great game. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Enjoy it. Should be fun. I like that idea that you can knock them out of the playoffs.
Yes.
I mean, that gives you something to play for.
It does. No, it's fun. It is. I mean, you beat your division opponent and you knock them out of the playoffs. It's something I can – it's funny. I was thinking about that end your kick at the end. We talked about knocking them out of the playoffs, and it is fun to knock your division opponent off because you don't like them. You see them twice a year, and that's just a team you don't want to – you want to beat, and that just gives you a little bit of a little bit more ammunition.
A whole lot of folks got fired after that game.
They did.
That ushered in the Matt Millen era in Detroit, the Marty Morningweg era in Detroit, and a lot of folks, a lot of veteran players. My rookie year was 2001. There's a lot of guys who were still on the roster held over from that previous season that were none too pleased that a lot of the folks that they had been playing for.
But that's what's fun about competing, man. That is fun. I hate to say it. They had sad faces. I remember running up the tunnel and being so happy. I was young and thought it was so cool. We played it. It was a Silverdome, too, we played in.
Yeah.
Right.
Good God. That you would the flight to Detroit was shorter than the drive to the Silverdome.
Yes, it was.
it was ridiculous. Yeah. All right. We got a lot left. We're going to do it next. It is the pregame show. We've got Patrick Manley and Anthony Herron at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.